The following is a presentation by His Holiness Ramapada Swami Maharaj on the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 15, Purushottam Yoga, Yoga of the Supreme Person, on Saturday, May 31st, 2008.
Jana bhala bhagiri.
Okay, the first part is for the adults and the second part is for adults and kids. We're going to be doing part one, or the first few verses of chapter 15 of Bhagavad Gita. What's chapter 15 called? Yoga of the Supreme Person, and in Sanskrit it's Purushottama Yoga. What does Purushottama mean? Supreme Person. Purusha, Uttama. Purushottama, the Supreme Person. Yoga of the Supreme Person. So, amazingly, chapter 15 follows chapter 14. It's very brilliant. Chapter 14 of Bhagavad Gita is about what? Oh, that's the sound of the child's toy. Is that what it is? Not a tugboat after all. It's a dumpster. A dump truck. So chapter 14 of Bhagavad Gita is about three modes of material nature. So in the three modes of material nature chapter, Krishna describes how the three modes of material nature work, divides them into the three categories, and describes how the modes of nature condition the living entity into various qualities and various types of work and various types of knowledge and varieties of everything that you find in existence, determined by the three modes of nature. And then Krishna says, all living entities are bound by these three modes of material nature. And then Krishna says, but there are some that are not bound. It sounds like a contradiction, but it's not. With the exception of those that are the liberated souls, there are those that are bound. So Arjuna asks a very natural and appropriate question. How does one become unbound, freed from the modes of material nature? What are the symptoms of one who is liberated soul? By what qualities can they be known? And most importantly, how do you get there? How does one become freed from the modes of material nature? So Krishna answers, these are the symptoms, these are the qualities by which one can know who is liberated, and the method of becoming freed, this is the conclusion of chapter 14, is through undivided, unflinching, unswerving devotional service to the Personality of Godhead. And when one engages in that way, unfailingly in devotional service, then one comes to the platform of Brahman. And this platform of Brahman has its source in Krishna. So that's how chapter 14 ends. So Krishna then is naturally going to be asked by Arjuna to transcend the modes of material nature. One needs to be engaged in devotional service. But, there's always a but if there's affinity for matter, how can you get to the platform of devotional service? And so, hint, this is how chapter 15 begins. Detachment from matter. It's not a new topic in Bhagavad Gita. It's expanding on topics already discussed. The final third of Bhagavad Gita is expanding on ideas already discussed in Bhagavad Gita. You can end Bhagavad Gita at the end of chapter 12. Starting with chapter 13 through 18, it's explaining again in a deeper way subject matters already discussed. So detachment is already discussed. So now chapter 15 begins with emphasis on detachment from matter, which results in or makes it possible to become attached to spirit. Say it the other way around. As long as one remains attached to matter, it's not possible to become attached to spirit. In our Bhagavatam discussion this morning, we're reading in the temple from canto 2, chapter 6 of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is explaining the Purusha Sukta prayers of Rig Veda. Very nice. It's a commentary on those very, very important prayers. Sahasra Shirsha Purusha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat. You've heard that so many times. So that's the Purusha Sukta prayers, how they begin. And it's describing, as Purushottama Yoga chapter is describing, everything comes from the energetic source, Purusha. So in that discussion this morning, and in this chapter 6 of Canto 2, there's the Tripad Vibhuti and Ekapad Vibhuti, the three-quarters portion and the one-quarter portion. Of three-quarters portion is the spiritual realm. One-quarter portion is the material realm. It's not like a pie and you just divide it into, okay, one slice for matter and three-quarter slices for spirit. It's an idea that the spiritual side is much greater. And attachment to matter means attached to that one-quarter portion. That prevents one from entering into three-quarters portion. What to speak of the person behind the three-quarters portion, that's the personality of Godhead, who just coincidentally happens to be the same person behind the one-quarter portion. Only he's hidden within the heart. So, the first part of chapter 15 is addressing the need for detachment, and that is done through a metaphor. Metaphor is the metaphor of a banyan tree, a ashvata tree. And we'll hear how Krishna uses this metaphor to describe the material world, including the flowery language of the Vedas, which Krishna has already said in chapter 2, that one should not become bewildered by the flowery language of the Vedas, because in the flowery language of the Vedas there's some apparent, at least, encouragement to try to enjoy the fruits of various sacrifices. Through various sacrifices, persons generally think, Krishna says in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, the purpose is to enjoy prosperously, in goodness, enjoy the fruits of nice sacrifices recommended within the Vedas. Krishna encourages Arjuna, don't become bewildered by that flowery language of the Vedas. Rather, the essence of all of the Vedas is to know me. So, detachment through cutting down with the instruments of knowledge. Krishna's going to, this is the final six chapters of Bhagavad Gita are described by our commentators, our acharyas, as giving additional gyan or knowledge. So it's called the gyan yoga section of Bhagavad Gita. Through knowledge to cut down, using the axe of knowledge, cut down the ashvatha tree. And so that one can then see the spiritual world, the tripad vibhuti portion. And in that spirit of detachment, it's not just be detached in the sense of don't care. It's be detached from the spirit of trying to enjoy the fruits of piety. Instead, in that spirit of detachment, one should surrender unto the personality of Godhead. Not approaching the personality of Godhead for yet another opportunity to become an enjoyer of the material world. But in detached spirit, simply serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What should be one's goal while moving about this one quarter portion? One's objective or one's goal should be, Krishna is explaining in this 15th chapter, to return to the spiritual world. To return to the spiritual world means leave this material world. Because living entities, they are eternally part and parcel of Krishna. That's natural. It's the 98.6. It's the healthy condition. And we're so used to this feverish condition, we think the solution to my fever is I need more. I need more material possessions. I need more wealth and more facilities, enjoyment, and then I'll become happy. But that increases the fever. And the solution isn't go the other way. Just make it zero. Just cut your head off and destroy the material circumstance and temperature becomes zero. That's not healthy either. Just not make it zero or not increase either. Just make it 98.6. Make it what's natural for the soul. The natural for the soul is to be in their eternal relation with the Supreme. So instead, struggling, manakshastrani indriyani prakritistani karshati, the living entity is struggling very hard. This struggle, the next section concludes, that struggle is understood very clearly by the transcendentalist. Conversely, the materialist can't understand it. They're bewildered by it, they're caught up within it, and it says, play the game. Struggle. Struggle for happiness. They like Darwin's philosophy. Struggle of the fittest. Just become fit and win. And dominate the weaker. That's the program. And the transcendentalist understands that's the material program. But the living entity is unnaturally engaged in that way. The real position is to return to the spiritual world. So cut down, again, the emphasis is made on detachment from this material circumstance, the ashvata tree. In order to live that way, practically speaking, there are some requirements that we have. We have needs. We have needs for maintaining ourselves. So the next section is look to Krishna, who is the maintainer of all living entities. He is already in that position, even those that think otherwise. Krishna is the maintainer of everyone. In this physical realm and in the spiritual realm, the Ekapad Vibhuti and the Tripad Vibhuti. So, recognizing Krishna's position in that way, we can feel safe, protected, comforted, attracted to take shelter of Him. It's almost done with a little overview of the chapter. The next to the last section is a continuation of something from chapter 13. It's nice to see how parts of the Bhagavad Gita fit together. So what's chapter 13? Chapter 13 is Krishna's being asked by Arjuna about to further explain six topics: Jnanam, Gyayam, Purusha, Prakriti, and what's the other pair? Kshetra, Kshetra, Gya. So there's knowledge, and there's the object of knowledge, but then there's this third thing, one who possesses knowledge, the knower. So section of chapter 15 is speaking about the knower. Of course, there's two categories of knowers, just like there's two categories of Kshetragya. We discussed that this morning. Like within this body, there's two knowers. With each and every body, there's us, and that's, we know what's going on within our body. The sensations, the pleasures, the pain, the itches, the hunger, the thirst, the cold and warm and whatever it is. We're feeling those sensations. And then there's another knower that's within this body that knows all of those plus in every other body simultaneously. Like nanotechnology. There's a camera inside taking pictures of everything, that's happening, and everyone simultaneously. That's super soul, the second knower. So Krishna explains in this, following the spirit of detachment, he then takes one into the spiritual side, because you can't enter the spiritual side without detachment from the material side. In the spiritual side, there's living entities that are conditioned, and then there's living entities that are not conditioned, liberated. It goes back to chapter 14, the being freed from the modes of material nature. So making this distinction, there's two categories of knowers: the conditioned and the liberated. And then there's the Supreme, who is beyond both, the conditioned and the liberated, the ever liberated, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who maintains the conditioned and the liberated. He maintains the three worlds, this whole Ekapad Vibhuti, this whole created cosmos. And then Krishna explains that within the Vedas, he is that person, and he's celebrated in that way. The Vedas declare he is that person. Of course, he's standing before Arjuna disclosing all of this. This is Purushottama Yoga. And once again, all of this is not going to be understood by those who are materially attached. Just, it's not possible. So then he concludes the chapter that just by this simple knowledge of knowing Krishna, then one becomes the knower of all things. And the knower of all things doesn't mean you can be on a quiz panel of minutiae and you know all the little trivia questions that they might ask. Not that you're walking encyclopedia. But that you know the connection between all things and the source of emanation, Krishna. That spiritual understanding. It makes one wise. In ordinary circumstances, in happy circumstances, in difficult circumstances, in all circumstances. And whatever endeavors one makes, perfection is achieved. It's not necessarily in terms of outcome by material estimation, but the purpose of life is achieved. All of one's endeavors of life are crowned with ultimate success because Krishna is pleased, Krishna is connected with. And that's Purushottama Yoga chapter. Summary. Okay, so now this was it's kids' time. You can pay attention now, it's okay. This was prepared for the Gita camp in Chicago last summer. So Shreya already knows this one. And the voices are the children that attended the camp. Their voices are, they're giving the purport of Krishna's words. That's very nice.
Chapter 15, The Yoga of the Supreme Person.
The chapter uses this metaphor of an upside-down tree. Upside-down doesn't literally use that word, but it describes where the roots grow up and the branches grow down. We don't find a tree where the roots grow up and the branches grow down. Sometimes with a banyan tree you can't tell which is a root and which is a branch. Oh, Ashvata tree.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "It is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down."
Now, the adjective imperishable lets us know that banyan trees of this world are perishable, so it's another kind of tree. Where it's imperishable and the roots grow upward and the branches grow down.
And whose leaves are the Vedic hymns.
So we find such a tree with the roots up and the branches down in a reflection of a tree in the surface of water. So Krishna is going to describe that. But where there are leaves of the tree, the leaves are the Vedic hymns, the fruit. This is the creation of the material world. At the root of the material creation is Lord Brahma. From one source, all of the other generations of men and demigods and species of life and the Vedas themselves and the hymns of the Vedas and the fruits of the hymns of the Vedas, the whole tree of material existence emanates from Lord Brahma at the top. And then the population grows down like a tree, upside down. Vedic hymns are important, they'll be described a little bit further.
One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas.
There he is. There's Lord Brahma. And there's the realm of the Devas, Swargaloka. And there's the fruitive workers down here. And there's the lower species of life. And there's some pious acts. And there's some impious acts over here. And economic development and religiosity and sense gratification and dharma. And these leaves, they're the Vedic hymns. They're to assist the living entity to go further up in this tree, this banyan tree. So our children are going to give us the nice purport to this verse.
This material world is compared to an upside down banyan tree. Have you ever seen a tree with its roots upward and branches down? Yes, there is such a thing. Reflection of a tree in a reservoir of water.
There they are. The roots go up and the branches go down in the reflection. So that means the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. There is an imperishable tree, and there is this reflection of that imperishable tree, or the banyan tree, and in the reservoir of water. So now further, that metaphor is going to be explained.
Similarly, the tree of this material world is a reflection of the real tree, the spiritual world.
So here's the spiritual world, Krishna Loka, shaped like a lotus, and then this reflecting surface, and down here is the material world, where in the spiritual sky there's this cloud of the Mahatattva, and within the cloud of Mahatattva, look, there he is, there's Mahavishnu lying down in this cloud of the material energy. But this is a reflection of that.
Just as the tree's reflection is situated on water, reflection of the spiritual world is situated on desire.
A lot of sense control they're exhibiting by just looking at all those pieces of candy. So the idea is that the reflecting surface is the mind, and the mind becomes dusty or dirty or covered, and then according to the covering, one doesn't see the spiritual world, the original tree, one sees the reflection reflected upon desires within the mind. The mind is that reflecting surface. If the mind becomes pure, then one can see the spiritual world. Otherwise, one will see the reflection only.
The reflection is dirty if the mirror is dirty. The reflection is affected by the reflecting surface. The reflection is shaky when the water ripples.
So just like on the surface of water, if the very calm water, crystal clear calm water is there, then the object, even the reflection, appears to be like the image. But if the water's surface is disturbed, then the image is also distorted from what the actual tree looks like. Similarly, if the mind is disturbed, then the distorted picture even of the reflection will come into the mind. So it's double trouble.
Similarly, although the soul is pure, it becomes affected when matter changes.
So the lack of peacefulness of the mind is, when one is attached to matter, results in disturbance of one's feelings. But all that's going on is matter is changing. And because the mind is covered and disturbed, then unhappiness results. However, the soul has nothing to do with any of this, the reflection or the distorted reflection.
And the reflection is temporary and never satisfies.
As shown in the image here, if the little child tries to share his ice cream with the mirror, can the image in the mirror be satisfied by holding the ice cream cone to the mirror? Similarly, even putting the ice cream cone in his mouth, although it may appear by sense contact, very nice. As far as the soul is concerned, it's still missing the real point of satisfaction. Whatever objects one brings in contact with the senses, it doesn't bring satisfaction because the reflection is temporary, so it never satisfies.
The branches of this tree extend downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of material nature.
The three modes of material nature was just discussed in the previous chapter, chapter 14. So, nourished by the three modes of material nature, these branches that extend both downward and upward, just like in a banyan tree, they're nourished, the diversities within the material world, they're nourished by the modes of material nature. Let's say one wants happiness in the mode of ignorance. One just wants to sleep and sleep and sleep and morose and depressed and sad and lamenting and nourished by the modes of nature. Some extension of the banyan tree or passion. Achieve something, victory, conquest, win, defeat, passion. Conquer, control, enjoy, possess, nourished by the modes of nature. This is the reflection, this is the desires within the mind, or in the mode of goodness. Similarly, nourished by the modes of nature.
There is no end to this banyan tree with its complicated, intertwined trunks, roots, and branches.
Sometimes very, very old, huge banyan trees can extend very large area within Vedic literature, sometimes miles, one banyan tree. And the whole material world is one big banyan tree.
The soul wanders in the tree from one branch to another to another. Thus it becomes enamored and forgets everything beyond this tree.
In the business of trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree, it's practically endless.
The twigs are the objects of the senses,
namely sound, form, touch, etc. The tips of the branches are the senses, the ears, nose, eyes, etc., which are attached to the enjoyment of different sense objects.
This is from Prabhupada's purport. The twigs, so that we know what the leaves are, they're the hymns, and what supports the leaves is the twigs. That is, we want enjoyment for the senses, and so the Vedic hymns provide mode of goodness ways to find satisfaction for the senses. And when the senses come in contact with different sense objects, then at least the conditioned soul, seeing the reflection only, thinks, this is very nice.
This tree also has roots going down, and these are bound to the fruitive actions of human society.
So, roots go up, but the banyan tree also has roots that go down. This is fruitive actions, and that as the root that goes down into the earth holds fast the tree to the ground, so also pious activities, impious activities with fruitive intention bind the soul to this material world.
The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is.
So the real form of this tree, that's the tree that's on the bank, not just the reflection of the tree. So the imperishable Ashvata tree is in the spiritual world. And one who is attached to this material world and sees that only cannot understand this spiritual tripad vibhuti, the three quarters portion, the spiritual sky, even the material sky. What's the length and breadth of this universe? What to speak of numberless universes? What to speak of where they come from? Where they begin, where they end, what their foundation is? It's beyond the capacity of a conditioned soul to understand these things.
But with determination, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment.
So there's the axe. It's detachment. So with determination and with proper knowledge, these two, jnana and vairagya, this couplet always goes together in Vedic teaching. Through knowledge, through the acts of knowledge with determination, one should cut down this fruitive enjoying the material facilities program.
Thereafter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns.
This is Dhruva sitting beneath a banyan tree and meditating as he was instructed by the great sages.
And there surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial.
This is important. This is Purushottama Yoga, because what's the purpose of detachment? The purpose of detachment is not just, oh, it's too frustrating, I don't want all this trouble. That's the wrong spirit of detachment. The right spirit of detachment is so that one can connect to the spiritual side with the Supreme. And surrendering to the Supreme, then one can understand where all of this came from, the reflection and the original tree, and from whom everything and everyone has existed, even before I existed, since time immemorial. One can have that factual understanding through this process that's described in this chapter.
Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association.
Now, Krishna is here giving qualities of one who is situated in the spirit of detachment and connected with the Supreme. The principle of false prestige, we discussed it this weekend. Manena, or mana. Mana is having false prestige. Lord Chaitanya, we're going to hear it this evening. Amanina is free from false prestige. False prestige is taking credit oneself for that which belongs to someone else. If I have the sense of being the proprietor, here we have a very nice house. If I can think, I have such a nice house. I can think like that, but it's not my house. Somebody else's house. But if I go around thinking, God, I possess such a nice house, it's illusion. And if I try to act as if it's my house, police can come and take me away. It's not my house. And the items within the house. So similarly, we enter this material world owning nothing. And in between entering and leaving, owning nothing, we're trying to make so many things mine. That's the material program. How much can I make mine? And proud, of how much I've made mine. False prestige. So, Krishna is saying here, the symptom of one who is connected with Purusha Uttama in the process of yoga or linking with him, they're freed from false prestige and illusion and false association. So, two examples are given here. One is Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami had plenty of opportunity to have big time false prestige. He was from a Saraswat Brahmin family, and he was in the governance of the king of Nawab Hussein Shah. He was practically the prime minister of what is half of India today. And he was vastly learned. He was fluent in 7 languages and very, very, very expert in the affairs of diplomacy and governing. But when he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he spoke just the opposite. I am of low birth, and I have no intelligence, and I have no qualification. I'll prove to you that I have no intelligence. I don't even know who I am. People say, oh, you're so intelligent, and I'm such a fool. I think, yes, yes, I'm so intelligent. But to tell you the truth, I don't even know who I am. So, humility and pridelessness are the characteristics of one who's in Purushottama Yoga. Similarly, Maharaj Prataparudra, the king of Orissa, took the position of a menial street sweeper when it came to the time of Jagannath Rathyatra. He took a broom with a golden handle and in simple clothing, not his royal attire, came before Lord Jagannath and swept the road for his coming out of the temple and onto the chariot of Jagannath.
Who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust.
This is an example of Maharaj Yudhisthira when he heard from Arjuna, after Arjuna accompanied Krishna back to Dwarka, and Maharaj Yudhisthira is now on the throne, and Arjuna came back after some months and informed the Pandavas that Krishna has left this world. The whole Yadu dynasty is gone and Krishna is gone. So with that, Maharaj Yudhisthira turned over his kingdom to his grandson Maharaj Parikshit, and immediately went to the north country, completely detached, not thinking, oh, well, that's okay, I'm now in control of the world. Done with material lust, more fixed upon the eternal.
Who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress.
Here's this example of distress. This is Vidura, when he was insulted by Duryodhan, and standing silently behind him was Dhritarashtra, saying nothing. So Vidura, not out of anger, oh, you spoke some harsh words, I'm leaving. Not out of that, but out of detachment from the whole affair of the intrigue of the Kauravas. He left his bow and arrow by the door and left the royal palace, not saying a word to anybody. And he went on pilgrimage. And while on pilgrimage, he had the opportunity to hear from Maitreya in detail about spiritual truths and became a perfected soul. So, free from the dualities of distress and happiness. And this is Maharaj Parikshit, after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami, even the Tatakshaka, the mystical snake bird. There's snakes that crawl on the ground, there's birds that fly in the sky, but there's no such thing as a snake that flies in the sky or a bird that crawls on the ground. But that was this guy. mystical snake bird. And when he came before Maharaj Parikshit, he was fearless. And just by the bite of the serpent, at once his body burst into flames with the intensity of the poison of Tathakshaka. So, free from the dualities of happiness and distress.
And who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person.
As did Bali Maharaj when Lord Vamana came before him, or as did Dhruva Maharaj when he was instructed by Narada how to perform his process of reaching Lord Vishnu. And when Lord Vishnu came before him, he was in ecstasy, the fulfillment of surrender to the Supreme Person.
Attain to that eternal kingdom.
As did Dhruva at the end, the Vaikuntha Vimanas descended at the end of his life and carried him to the spiritual world.
That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity.
Meaning it's self-effulgent. Here we have to have either the sun or electricity, or some kind of light, because otherwise it's a place of darkness. But in the spiritual realm, Krishna is disclosing about his abode, the Purushottama's abode. It's self-luminous, so there's no need of illumination.
Those who reach it never return to this material world.
This is showing the Vaikuntha realm and the Goloka realm. So in that spiritual world, once going there, this is an encouragement, in case you didn't notice. There's all these problems in the material world, but that spiritual world has all these wonderful features, and once you go there, there's no requirement to return to this material world. It's the eternal realm, full of bliss and full of knowledge. So now our children are going to enlighten us about the meaning.
All the planets in the spiritual sky are self-luminous. The shining effulgence of the Vaikuntha planets actually come from Krishna's planet, Goloka Vrindavan. In a tiny part of the shining effulgence is the material world, as if covered by a cloud.
That's this portion down here. As if covered by a cloud, part of the whole spiritual sky is the material, the cloud of the material energy, the Mahatattva. But in this vast other portion, so this isn't just one quarter, three quarters, but that's the one quarter portion pictured down here. And the spiritual sky is vast, where the illumination from Krishna's planet, Goloka Vrindavan, is radiating out, and the whole spiritual sky is that luster, radiance from Krishna and his Goloka Vrindavan abode.
Only the sun is self-luminous in this dark region and illuminates the whole universe.
Well, this is the sun when it's in the northern hemisphere, because the dark part is the southern hemisphere on this side of the earth globe. When it's light on the other side, then it's dark over here, because there's only one self-luminous planet in this dark region in our solar system. But in the spiritual sky,
Krishna is describing his supreme abode to attract us to come there. One should become captivated by this information.
So it's like a tourist advertisement. Please come to Disneyland, because you'll find Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and Alice in Wonderland and so many nice things. So Krishna is similarly promoting the spiritual world. Please come and enjoy eternally. So that wonderful side of the spiritual world should encourage us further in the spirit of detachment from this temporary place. where one can eternally enjoy with Krishna as a cowherd boy or Krishna's mother or father, or in that mood of Krishna's mother and father, the elder gopas and gopis in Braja, or the cows or the gopis, and eternally enjoy loving exchanges with Krishna in the spiritual world, where there's no death, there's no old age, there's no material miseries as we know here, no envy, no jealousy, no lust, no greed, no anger, no taxes, no mortgage. No trace of the modes of nature. They're absent totally. Time is absent. So there's the beginning part of chapter 15 of Bhagavad Gita, Purushottama Yoga. Hare Krishna.
We are trying to enjoy in this dark material world, but whatever happiness we find here is temporary.
Time's up.
Whatever happiness we find here is mixed with misery. Like sweet rice mixed with sand. Because it's without God in the center. Krishna is calling us to the spiritual world where we can experience never-ending bliss in His service. When Krishna is in the center, even in this world, we can experience spiritual bliss.
Hare Krishna.
One should take it very seriously that devotional service is the only way to get out of this false reflection. One should associate with devotees and learn how to discharge devotional service. One can thus enter that supreme abode by surrendering to Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay. I think that takes us into the next section over here. Yeah, that's the next section. Makes you want to go to Gita camp, doesn't it? Get absorbed in this understanding from childhood so we can save ourselves a lot of trouble. Unnecessary trouble. Okay. Any comments or questions? Yes?
The last four verses of the 14th chapter, Krishna says that if you engage in undivided social service, then you come to Brahman, which I am the source of. So I'm wondering why Krishna doesn't say, you attain. How come we attain Brahman if we engage in devotional service, not the Bhagavan conception?
It doesn't say that you don't attain the Bhagavan conception. It says you attain Brahman. And Brahman, then he explains. Brahman implies the spiritual world, and of which Krishna is the source. You attain that spiritual realm of which Krishna is the source. There's in the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, there's six in number, and Tattva Sandarbha, Bhakti Sandarbha, maybe Krama Sandarbha. In one of the Sandarbhas, about two-thirds of it is explaining the answer to your question, which is is he makes a statement. Whenever Brahman appears, we should understand it implies Bhagavan. Just like through the curtains are pulled, but still light of the sun is coming through, so we can understand it's daylight. The sun is there. We can say the sun is coming into the room. It's not literally the sun is coming into the room, but the light of the sun is coming. The light of the sun implies the sun. Brahman similarly implies Bhagavan. So to say one attains Brahman implies one attains the spiritual world. And then he explicitly says that which is the effulgence, he is the pratishta of that effulgence. He's the basis and support of it. So one attains the spiritual world, the spiritual sky, the paravyom, Brahman. Tripad Vibhuti, the spiritual uncovered portion of God's creation. Yes.
I think one of the slides we saw, like when the king registered after Lord Krishna, he announced his kingdom and went to the Himalayas.
Yeah.
So before that, like, he was performing his duty as a king.
That's right.
So performing your duty in this material world is also a material attachment.
No. Well, if performance of duty is done for the Supreme, then it's not the product of attachment, it's the product of attachment to Krishna. On the platform of pure devotion, we'll give another example, Bhishma Dev. Throughout the course of his life, he performed so many duties. And when it came the time for his choosing to give up the body, and by choice, he just withdrew his mind, withdrew his active senses, amalgamated them in their very concentrated state upon Krishna, fixed his mind, literally his sight upon Krishna, his thought upon Krishna, and gave up his body. So one was willing to do some service. Another position was willing to quit the body and return to the spiritual abode. They're on the same platform for a personality like Bhishma. So in our case, the execution of duties, to be reasonable, is mixed. To some degree it's out of attachment. To some degree it's for some higher purpose than attachment. The idea is to go fully to the side of, for that higher purpose, which helps us become detached. And there are other things that help us become detached, like understanding the temporary nature of those things which are duties in this world. The happiness derived even from performance of duties in this world. So a transcendentalist like Bhishma or Yudhisthira did their duties without attachment. And when the purpose of their duties had been fulfilled, detachment. Krishna wanted that Yudhisthira rule the world, and so he ruled the world. And Krishna left and he joined Krishna, leaving the kingdom still properly protected by a pious king, qualified king. So it's safe to assume that our motivations are mixed. But non-performance of duty because our motivations are mixed is another type of attachment. In fact, it's sinful. Neglect of duty. Yeah.
We talk about detachment but sometimes it happens like you know that you, your senses are driving in one direction but you don't want to go there but you are not able to control. So you get this like feeling of say negative feelings for yourself like you want to control but you are not able to control. So what is the best in this situation?
Krishna! Rely upon Krishna. So we need more strength than our own strength. And we rely upon greater strength than our own strength, and Krishna's help is there. Not some of the time, all the time. And because it's the message of this chapter and it's part of Krishna's Bhagavad Gita message, you get out the axe or the sword, the instrument for cutting attachment with knowledge. Where is this going to lead me? So there's the restraint of the senses, but the pulling is maybe greater than the restraint. Get out the sword. Wait a minute. What am I doing here? What is this pulling that's going on? Where is this going to take me? I'm just going to become further immersed in the reactions, actions and reactions of this complicated material existence. So knowledge can assist. Krishna, ultimately, knowledge can also assist. And suffering, the result of acting foolishly, is suffering. That also can assist. I don't want to suffer. I know that I will suffer. I've experienced it. It brings suffering. And then as we spoke last night, association. Reach out to a fellow devotee and say, help. I'm being pulled hard. There's strength in association. And there's strength in quality of goodness by regularity. One follows regulation. And then the pulling may be there, but you get some strength from, no, I'm not going to go there. I have this strength that comes from performing proper activity in a regular way. You do it in a regular way. Practice and practice and practice and practice. Becomes much more difficult to pull a practiced person away from the strength of that mode of goodness quality than someone that is irregular in their practices. Anything else? Yeah.
One of the slides said the acts of detachment is sharpened by knowledge.
The act of?
The acts of detachment is sharpened by knowledge and discrimination.
Yeah.
Would you please elaborate on discrimination?
Knowledge and discrimination is spoken of in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Like, understanding the modes of, just like this question over here, it was just asked. So you're going along in the path of life and you find yourself in a situation where, yipes, there's this horrific display of stuff going on all around me. And it can be frightening or alarming or I don't know what to do in this situation. So you grab the axe of knowledge and start looking at the situation through the lens of knowledge. Oh, there's a very interesting display of the mode of ignorance. There's another very spectacular display of the mode of passion. And so it's not intimidating or fearful, it's just the modes of nature doing their thing. And then you can act calmly or with some thoughtfulness and deliberation, not just reacting to the circumstance. Detachment through knowledge. And discriminating. Like, you know, discriminating what you will eat and not eat. It's real easy if it's just Krishna Prasadama's category of yes, and then otherwise it's no. So that's discrimination. But if one doesn't see one thing from another thing, then what do you do? It's, you know, it appeals to meet my senses or it doesn't. Without discrimination. So knowledge, aided by knowledge and discrimination, detachment is strengthened. Yeah.
On the Kumaraj, I've noticed that when you refer to the sign, you call it a planet, and modern so-called science refers to it as a star. I was wondering, is there a reason in maybe cosmology, why?
Why which?
The sun.
Sun. It's called a planet instead of a star?
Because modern science calls it a star.
The sun planet instead of the sun star. Well, it's probably just innocent, probably not like deliberate, but there certainly is a distinction between how the Vedas view self-luminous planets and how modern astronomy views self-luminous planets. Modern astronomy views luminous planets as often self-luminous, whereas Vedic astronomy sees many of the planets that are thought of as being also suns as moons, as just reflecting the light of the sun, not self-luminous. But that's a detail, that's not really what you're asking. I don't think there's a deliberate purpose behind sun being referred to as a planet as opposed to a star. Okay. So what do we do next? Take prasadam? We have a little prasadam? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.